Morning, folks. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. Great guest across the way today. I've had her on the show here before. She is an interesting woman. I tell you what, the woman was just sitting here telling me stories, and my jaw is dropping in the middle of the conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ruthie Shelton to the show. Good morning, Ruthie. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm good. I'm doing real good.
Ruthie comes up from Florida for this show, along with other things. What else is going on this week and this weekend that you are up here for, Ruthie?
Okay, this week on...
By the way, ladies, Ruthie is a member of the... descendant of a Shelton gang member.
Thank you.
Not a member. Okay, I got you. Descendant.
Right. Friday afternoon, I'll be in Mount Carmel at the library for a book signing from 2 to 4.
Uh-huh.
And then Saturday.
Where's the library in Mount Carmel? I'm trying to remember. It's like just off the square, isn't it?
Okay. I don't do directions, but it's like math. I don't do that either. If you head to Mount Carmel from Fairfield and stay on 15,
okay,
and just keep staying on 15,
okay,
and then you'll be in Mount Carmel, and on the right eventually will be a library sign,
okay,
and you turn right, and then it's on your left.
There you go.
Okay.
easy as pie.
But we are really excited about the Wayne County Shelton Tour on Saturday. We still have a few seats available. Amy Mitchell Erickson and I did that tour last year.
That was a really well-received tour, wasn't it?
It was. And we did it twice last year because the first time just sold out in days.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And so we really enjoyed it. The people who went on it, everybody said how much they enjoyed it.
That's one of the interesting things about what you do and what you do up. You've never spent a whole lot of time in this area, have you? At what point did you move away?
Okay, here's where people get confused.
I clearly am.
No, not you, just in general. Because my dad was from here, because my family was from here.
Right.
But the Sheltons fled this area in 1951
and
went to Florida. So my dad met my mom down there. She was from Georgia.
Okay.
So I was born in 1960, giving you my age there. 55.
Well, you'd already told me it anyway.
Right, exactly. In Jacksonville, Florida.
Uh-huh.
So my husband, James, and I and our kids, we've traveled all over the country. We always took our kids to the national parks, state parks, camped, you know, just did everything.
Sure.
So we have, of course, driven through Illinois, but we were one of those families that never took time to stop and see the beauty here.
Right.
So after my dad told me who he really was and we brought him out here, we fell in love with it.
You hadn't been here before, had you?
No. Mm-mm. Like I say,
you didn't know where his family was from.
Exactly.
Right?
Knew nothing about the Shelton gang, nothing about Wayne County. It was an absolute blank. My dad's passed. James and I and our daughter, youngest daughter, was still at home with us. We fell in love with this area.
Wonderful.
We came back the next year. As you know, I brought my dad out here.
Yeah.
One whole day I got to spend. Because the next morning, he just was panicked.
He didn't want to stick around any longer.
No, he said, we're going home. And we got to stay for an hour long enough to see the Hannah House Museum that was ever so kindly opened up for us to see the exhibits in there. And then we went back to Florida.
Let's tell the story real quickly.
Okay.
You told it the last time you were here, but it's such an interesting story on how you became aware of your family's past. To me, it's something you just never hear about. Think of in movies, right?
Exactly. I wish they would make one. That would be nice.
That would be cool. That'd be pretty sweet since you wrote the book.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll ask John about that in the second segment.
Yeah,
How's that sound?
Yeah, he's got that end of it. I'm on the, let me just tell you about my family and how I found out.
Tell me how you found out.
Okay. Like I said, born and raised Jacksonville, Florida.
Sure.
Total tomboy. My dad would come home from work on
the
weekends.
He worked as a reporter, as I recall. Is that correct?
Carpenter.
Carpenter. Okay.
Carpenter. Supposedly.
Okay.
We'll get into that. He'd take us motorcycle riding. He'd take me to the pool halls. You know, we shot guns. There were always guns everywhere in my house and the vehicles. I was never allowed to ask about his past, never. The one incident that I do tell people about, I found a picture of this beautiful little girl, looked like a princess. She had a beautiful party dress on, patent leather shoes, white anklet socks. That was my sister, Elaine.
Oh, really?
Well, I took the picture to my mom, and I said, who is this little girl? I was like 5 or 6 years old. She snatched the picture from my fingers. She said, that's your daddy's first daughter.
Right.
And it disappeared, and it was never
You never saw that again?
Never. Not until after,
right.
You know, I was an adult.
Yeah.
So that was how I grew up. There was no discussion.
You didn't ask daddy about
his past.
I
didn't ask. Yeah. Nope, because I knew that. You learned that early. Moving on in life. And then, of course, after I was an adult, I respected the fact that my dad's past was his secret. And I did not ever try to. The one time I searched for my sister, I pushed to try to find out information
right.
from him about her.
Right.
But I hit a dead wall, and it made him so upset that I never mentioned it again.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you don't want to make your
right.
mom and dad upset. Or
exactly.
Yeah, sure.
So moving on to 2003, December, my dad had open-heart surgery. He was unconscious for 5 days. The doctors told us they didn't know if he was going to live. If he lived, they didn't know what state his mind would be in.
He had had some kind of blockage or something,
right.
apparently. Yeah.
Exactly. As he started to come out of it, he would say things, Ruthie, we've got to shoot them. We've got to get them. They're going to kill us. He would make motions of shooting people with his fingers being guns.
And yeah.
He was counting stacks of money and just, you know, strange things. But like I said, the doctor said they didn't know how he was going to be. So I attributed it to that and
yeah.
just kept trying to take care of my dad every
sure,
day in the hospital.
Sure, of course.
At one point, he said to me, he was telling me about an uncle that he dearly loved that had gotten murdered.
Right.
And he said to me, no, you have to listen. And it was that moment I realized my dad was telling me about his past.
He's telling you the story.
Now, this is what I've waited my whole life to hear. He was telling me about Big
Mrs.
Carl Shelton.
13 years ago. Your dad was little Carl, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was 03. December will be 13 years. And he told me his past. And I listened. Because I'd waited my whole life to know who
wow.
my dad really was.
How long did it take him to pour it out?
He started telling me the stories in the hospital very slowly. He was very worried that my husband and I were, particularly James, my husband, was going to look down on him because of his past.
Yeah.
But James loved my dad like his dad.
Oh, sure.
He had lost his dad years before.
He'd only known him as
right, Pop.
As Pop.
He was
yeah.
Pop, exactly. And, you know, he was a fantastic dad to me. He was the best grandfather you could have asked for our kids. And so that was all we ever saw him as. And so once Pop realized that it was not changing our opinion of him,
mm-hmm.
the stories began to flow.
Wow. So he felt some shame over over the past.
Yes, absolutely.
Were you able to make contact with your sister?
Oh, yes. Well, see, years ago when I did kind of push my dad, it was at the point that I found out who my dad really was. It had been 20 years before that I had finally found my sister Elaine. I had gone to Anne Erlene, Big Earl's
yeah.
wife, and I finally said, okay, I've been trying to find my sister for a couple of years now. I have made no headway. I'm hiring a private investigator. Well, all of a sudden, Anne Erlene knew where Elaine's mama lived,
yeah.
knew where her grandmother lived.
Yeah, you don't need to bring in an outsider.
Numbers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's just fascinating. Okay, so you get all this from your father, and you bring him back. How much did it take for him? What was the carrot that wanted him to come back just to show you around Wayne County? You kind of talked him into it, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a video. The SIU students a couple of years before had made a video about Charlie Berger.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Berger.
Yeah, Charlie Berger.
Yeah, okay. And I ordered a copy. I'll tell you how long ago it was. It was a VHS tape.
Okay.
So I got a copy of that and showed it to my dad. And, you know, it looks like it was so well made. It looks like it was back in the day.
Oh, really?
You know, and shows the land around here. And my dad saw it in tears just streaming down his face. And he said, okay, we'll go back. And this would have been November of 2004.
A year or so after his
surgery. Yeah, about a year after. Yeah. And he said, we'll go back someday. And I looked at him and said, Pop, you're 80 years old.
Yeah. Someday's coming.
Yeah. We're going now.
Yeah.
So within 2 or 3 days, we were on the road.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how we've always lived our lives. James
just
and
ready
I
to go.
Just ready to go. We've always kept a backpack ready and let's hit the road. Let's take the kids somewhere.
And the stories then that you got from your father and then your visit with your father to this area were basically the genesis of the book, right?
Yes. Absolutely. I had started keeping notes from the very beginning
for my own sake.
I didn't want to lose a word. I didn't want to forget a word. I wanted to be able to share it with my kids and my grandkids. You know, the stories my dad was telling me. He was telling me good stories at that point. He was, you know, about him being a kid growing up
adventures.
In Pond Creek. Exactly. So when we got out here, he wanted to go by the newspaper and see his friend Tom Matthews.
Yeah, T.O.
Well, you know, he didn't realize it was his son.
T.O. had passed probably not too long before that.
Right.
Maybe early, mid-90s, I think.
Okay. So it was Tom Matthews Jr.
Right.
who was now running the newspaper. So we go in there and Tom brings him in and, you know, sets him down on the couch and starts a typing. And so my dad was kind of excited about this and, you know, took a picture of him and, you know, it was on the newspaper. And we ended up back. Our daughter, Kristen, wanted to see how the printer worked, how the paper was printed. So Tom told us to come back later. And that was what we did. Newspaper hit the stands. And all of a sudden, my dad is sitting in the newspaper office signing autographs, and people are lined up out the door.
Wow.
They had Taylor Pinsonneau's book.
Yeah.
They had pictures. They had newspaper articles. They had that newspaper. It was crazy. Every person that came in had a good Shelton story to tell.
Wow.
How the Sheltons had
helped them somehow.
Helped. Exactly. Them, their family.
That's amazing.
So I started asking, after we got back to Florida, running ads and asking for the good Shelton stories. That was kind of where the book began.
I'm talking with Ruthie Shelton from Jacksonville, Florida. She's going to be running some tours this weekend, as well as doing a book signing in Mount Carmel. We're going to talk a little bit more about the book itself, as well as what she's been doing since the book. And we'll do that here when we return on the show. We're going to also talk with John Musgrave out of Marion. When we return on AM 1390 and WFIW FM Fairfield, back in a bit. Good morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Ruthie Shelton, my guest today from Jacksonville, daughter of little Carl Shelton, who was a member of the Shelton gang back in the 1950s. She's written a book about it. We're going to talk a little bit more about the book. Let's finish the story about your sister.
Okay,
so you were able to meet your sister 20 years before you found out from your father what the past was, right?
Right, exactly. After I told my Aunt Earlene, Big Earl's wife, that I was going to hire a private investigator, which was the last thing Shelton wanted, she gave me the phone number for Elaine's mom and grandmother. And so I called her grandmother. Well, she gave me the number for her grandmother. I called her the most wonderful, kindest person I've ever spoken to in my life. she gave me Elaine's mom's number, and mm-hmm. I called her. And she was very kind. She understood that I wanted to contact Elaine. She told me I could send letters to her, and she would forward them to Elaine. And that's what she did. And Elaine told me later that when she received the letters in the mail, she thought, why am I writing a letter to myself? Because it was the same stationery she used. Back then, you know, we used stationery and wrote letters.
Yeah.
This was in the early 80s. And
things you had in common.
Unbelievable.
Really?
Unbelievable. We both named one of our daughters each Jenny.
No kidding.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. And the bombing that everybody knows about that the Sheltons did of Charlie Berger's Shady Arrest, it was out of a Curtis Jenny. Neither one of us knew this. And but yeah. Okay, so back to
Wow. Oh my
I get
God.
Diverted.
That's incredible.
So we shared a few letters back and forth and spoke several times on the phone, and she agreed we could meet.
Sure.
So she lived several hundred miles away from us. So we went. It was like I told you, our kids and us, we traveled all over the country at the drop of a hat. When Elaine said, okay, come, we left. We went. And we drove to where she was, and she met us. We spent a few hours together. But she later told, I could tell there was something there.
A little wall, right?
Yeah, a little wall. But it was so wonderful finally meeting my sister.
Wow.
Knowing there was someone else in the world like me.
Sure.
I felt. Yeah. And finding out later, that was how she felt too. But she had to protect me. She went home and told her husband, her words were, that girl knows nothing about her dad's past, and it's not my place to tell her.
Yeah.
Couple more phone calls, and that was it. I could tell we could not be together at that point in time.
Sure.
And I was fine with it because I knew someday we would.
Really?
So I knew. After Pop's picture was in the Fairfield newspaper, someone here sent Elaine a copy of the paper. And when she opened it, she was okay with it. And she called me. And she said, I want to see our dad. Well, okay. Her dad was the man who raised her here
right.
in Fairfield.
Yeah, she wants to see Bilo.
Right.
Yeah.
She wanted to see my dad.
Yeah.
And meet him and let him know she was okay. She felt like that would be some closure he would need at that point in his life.
Did it work as she had thought?
Absolutely.
Really?
Better.
Well, that's wonderful.
I said, come. And within a couple of days, she and her husband were on an airplane that lived kind of like we do. You want to go, you just go.
You go.
She and my dad, we took them out to my dad's. They met with open arms.
Wonderful.
And she was part of his life the last 3 years of his life.
Well, that's wonderful.
And we have the running joke because of the, I've always called the picture of her that I found, the princess.
Mm-hmm.
It's even in the book, the princess picture,
mm-hmm.
that she was the princess with my dad, and I was just Ruthie. And that was the running joke, but I loved it. I'm so happy.
I presume you still stay in contact, of course.
Oh, we're together. I've already texted her this morning. Okay, I'm going to be on the show. I hope I don't blow it. Yeah, we're together. And she comes and sees us because we, you know, I have the beach.
Yeah.
So she comes to me.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so you're able to find this all came together, and you thought, you know, I'll like write this down, make a book out of it.
Well, I had started writing it, like I said, from notes.
Yeah.
Then I wanted to get the good stories because, you know, by the time we had brought my dad out here in 2004, I had found out there were several books out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they give the shall we say, wicked, evil side of the Sheltons. And the stories I heard here were the good stories. So I started collecting up the good stories. I'd share them with my dad. Sometimes he'd remember the people, the area. He got a lot of joy from that. Well, by the time my dad passed away, I was doing further research. And I decided to go ahead and write the entire story. Not just the good stories, which would have, you know, been a pamphlet.
Yeah.
And so I had to write the book. That was how I've worked through every emotional episode in my life.
So it's good and bad. It's warts and all. The book is, right?
Oh, it's everything.
Yeah.
It's, you know, about 1% of it is the good stuff. No, it's the truth.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you're a daughter and a loving daughter, of course, but you didn't whitewash anything.
No,
I guess what my point is.
It's in there. And there are things in there that I mulled over. Do I tell this?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't tell the whole story, then what good is my word going to be for anything?
You want to talk to your publisher?
Sure.
I didn't know what he wanted to add to the conversation this morning. What's he going to add?
I have no idea.
Well, I tell you what, he could probably also, he might be able to tell us a little bit about what you have in mind coming up, because you told me, and
yeah.
I think it's very exciting. Let's see if I can get this working. We're calling for John Musgrave. He is a publisher for Inside the Shelton Gang, also co-author.
Yes.
Hello?
Good morning, John Musgrave, please.
Yes, this is John.
Mr. Musgrave, this is Bruce Dickey calling from WFIW Radio. You're on the radio right now.
That's good.
I've got Ruthie along, too. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
Tell me a little bit, John, about how you were you aware of the Shelton Gang story before Ruthie contacted you, before you guys got in contact?
Yes, I learned about Charlie Berger first. My grandmother grew up within a quarter mile of Shady Rest, and I had heard stories about the Berger Gang as a kid and had trouble believing them, in the sense that the eastern part of Williamson County is so peaceful and tranquil.
Sure.
The idea of people riding around with machine guns just didn't fit. And then in junior high, the junior high library had Bloody Williamson, had Gary DeNeil's book, A Night of Another Sort, and that's when I first learned that Charlie Berger was real and learned about the Shelton Gang. And what's interesting, growing up, I always thought the Sheltons were the outside gang, the outsiders in Williamson County, and Charlie Berger was the local. And in doing this research over the last 10 years, it's amazing how much that, the Sheltons were the ones living in Williamson County at the beginning of the 20s. They were the local gangsters, and Charlie Berger was the outsider coming in from Harrisburg.
He was moving in on it from Saline, right?
Yes.
So when you found all this, or when you realized what the conventional wisdom that you had was wrong, it kind of made you want to enlighten the Shelton Gang a little bit. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, I wanted. I'm still working on a book about Southern Illinois in the 1920s, and it started off as a pictorial history. So I went to Taylor Pinsenow's book signing when he came out with his Charlie Harris book, and I asked him, who his source was for the pictures that he had in his Shelton Gang book, and was he still alive? And that's when he told me about Ruthie, because Ruthie had just contacted him recently, sometime before that, and we, made contact online, and then we talked, and then, at that time I offered, if you don't want to self-publish, I will publish your book. And she called back a year later, or the following year, and asked if I was still interested. And finally, later that summer, there was a Shelton family reunion at Fairfield, and that was the first time we got to meet in person.
Oh, is that right?
But I'd already been researching the Sheltons in the 20s, in that early history, whereas she had been tracking down her dad's story.
The 50s,
and
40s.
The later generation.
Yeah.
So it was an opportunity to kind of,
Does that work? John, when are you looking to publish yours if you're still working on the 20s book?
I'm still working on it. It's funny that I did the book in the old slave house, and I swore I'd never do another 10-year project. and we're getting close.
I was going to say, isn't it fun, John, how one makes plans?
Yeah. Well, and it's fun. It's like, in the process of doing this, and this actually started out, I was working with a Louis filmmaker on a script about Bloody Williamson, and to do that, we have to do the research, and the more you research, the more you realize what some of the other books got wrong. Or
yeah,
a lot of times the early books followed the newspaper account, which wasn't the complete story.
Right.
So you do the a lot of times I do the historical research to find what happened or who did what, and then I start doing genealogical research trying to find descendants to talk to someone in the family who might have something else, because it's interesting. There's a lot of people, even if they talk to Gary DeNeal or some of the other researchers 15, 20, 30 years ago, or at that point, they didn't want their names told,
right,
their names used. So there are places in Gary's book on Charlie Berger, for example, when he was doing his research in the 70s, that they just didn't want their names.
Because that would have been that was still relatively close to a Blackie Harris was still alive and in prison at that point. Yeah.
Now that they're dead, you know, their kids are willing to tell the stories because they think it's cool. You know, at this point, we've gone far enough. There's very little shame left. I just had a gentleman email me yesterday that apparently a third or fourth cousin of mine, but he was asking me about apparently his dad was a gambler. And was asking him about some names, and, you know, one of the names that he mentioned that was good friends with his dad was a guy who put up bail for a couple members of the Shelton gang.
Is that right?
In the 20s. And it's, you know, there's so much more out there in that families have. And it's just like Ruthie's dad never telling her what the stories were until, you know, it got to a point where he just, because of the medication in him, he didn't realize what he was saying. But there's a lot of times I have found where people do not want to talk.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Ruthie, do you think your dad would have ever told you the story if he hadn't been on medication?
No. I truly believe he would have taken it to his grave.
Wow.
Yeah, because he did not intend to tell me that, and it just came out. I was thinking, as John was saying about talking to the family members, I spoke with at least 10 or 12 people just, you know, sitting over the phone or sitting around the kitchen table from around here while I was writing the book, that told me that they have never told their stories to anyone. And they're only telling me because I'm Carl Shelton's daughter.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, you must have found, John, you must have found being able to get in contact with Ruthie a tremendous boon to both your research and to the opportunity to write a good book.
Yeah, I think what's neat when I was getting to talk to Ruthie as well as talking to other family members, you get to hear the other side of the story, or you get to flesh out these characters, what they're really like, and, you know, and it's not just a matter of an arrest record or, for example, thanks to the National Archives and the records at Leavenworth Penitentiary, I know far too much about the Shelton brothers. there are medical records. I know what diseases they had treated, you know, they needed treatment for while they were in there. You know,
that's amazing.
Carl,
you don't need to go any farther. You're talking about her dad. We might run into HIPAA laws here.
Yeah, they didn't have them back then. And with John having all the records, then I had the stories from the family and from the people, and so we were able to put it together. So he had the dates and the records, and such as the story of one of the times that Big Earl was arrested coming in from the Bahamas into Florida on the boat. Everybody else, they got boarded. Everybody else jumped off the boat and, you know, got away. Well, Big Earl, he couldn't swim. So he just stayed on the boat and got arrested. Well, I had the story from my dad, but John had the when and where of it all from the records.
You had the arrest,
because
record.
It was only 4 feet of water.
Yeah. But he couldn't swim, so he didn't know that. But that was how it worked out with the book. John had the records and was able to provide those insights, and I had the stories and the people and the feelings and the, you know, everything that happened.
John, Ruthie's kind of given me hints. What's next? And I understand you're considering publishing her next book. Is that correct?
I spilled the beans about the gangster wives.
Yes, you just have to finish it.
I haven't even started it.
Tell me your thoughts on the Gangster Wives books. A book that seems really exciting to me, doesn't it? To you?
Because it was funny when I was working on this script years ago with trying to figure out who do we show as Charlie Berger's wife, because there's a different one like every other year.
Yeah.
Because people like him, he was not a good husband type, but
sure.
he had kids, so he wanted a mother, someone to mother his kids and raise his kids for him. You know, one thing's interesting, but the Shelton brothers, you know, a lot of their first wife, you know, died tragically when they were young, and then after that, it's just. But sometimes you find the people, you know, Carl's second or third wife was a divorcee, and their stories passed down by what would have been Carl's stepdaughter, you know, of learning how to drive a car and there's always be a gun under the seat.
Oh, wow. Or,
same here.
And there's one of the one of Charlie Berger's last wives, which is the one that no one can find a marriage certificate for, including her family. She had a younger brother that lived at Charlie Berger's house. So he was a young teenager during the, probably 14, maybe 14 or 15, during the gang war in 26. He did not participate in that, but years later, he was one of Gary DeNeil's sources. But he was one that wouldn't allow his name to be used. Well, I've since talked to his died, and I've talked to his daughter, and you know, one of the stories that she had that either he didn't tell Gary or he told Gary not to use was that when the gang members would come in and bring, when they've gone out and robbed places, they would come in and hand the cash to Charlie.
Yeah,
but they would empty their pockets, and any change he would get to keep. This 14, 15-year-old.
Now that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's why I try to find the family stories, because that stuff that's not in the record.
John.
And what's amazing.
Go ahead.
We're still finding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is the amazing thing. This is all, you know, the Burger Gang War was, that's 90 years ago now, John.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's still, I've got some FBI records that the FBI had. They didn't have their main files on Berger or the Sheltons, but they had, like, ancillary files on other people. And in one case, there's a... they were investigating a Berger gangster for a stolen car. So an agent from the FBI came from St. Louis, came down to Harrisburg, went to the deputy U.S. Marshal in town, and they went out to Charlie's house. And this report, which is really about an investigation on just one of the minor gangsters who stole a car, talks about what Charlie's house was like.
Describes Berger's house.
The house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they went out and met with him, and, you know, and there's gangsters there and other family members. And it talks about a Shelton raid on Shady Rest that is not in any of the books.
Oh, really?
There's a couple times that I've seen hints that there was a shootout. There was something that took place actually inside the cabin. But
and just stayed quiet.
Charlie would talk about the attack, you know, if it came on an airplane or from the highway and everything. But apparently the Sheltons managed to get an army truck and some uniforms and put their guys in uniforms, and so they looked like the National Guard. But there may have been a shootout at Shady Rest.
John, this is very fascinating, but I appreciate your time. I got a break, but thank you very much for your time here, and I'm looking forward to whenever you and Ruthie get that next book together, and also to your book. Now that it's getting near 10 years, when are you looking at publishing?
I'm trying to wrap it up. I need to go out to Maryland, to the National Archives, and see what else is left. I'm running out of places where there are records, but I think I can tie it back up.
That's cool.
But it's just, yeah.
So what you're saying?
Everything I've got is on IllinoisHistory.com.
Okay. So what you're saying, there's more to come.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time, John. Thanks very much, and I appreciate you talking to me this morning.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. That's John Musgrave. He is the publisher for Ruthie Shelton. Ruthie's book, Inside the Shelton Gang, she'll be signing copies of it, as well as her other three books, and we're going to talk about those when we return here on the Bruce Dickey Show. The signing is Friday afternoon at the Mount Carmel.
Right. That's my first one, so if everybody wants to get out their pencil and paper, if I can, I'll give you my whole schedule.
We'll do that when we get back, okay?
Good.
Back in just a moment. Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. My guest across the way is Ruthie Shelton. She's the author of Inside the Shelton Gang, A Daughter's Discovery. And it's a fascinating, fascinating ride. But it's not the only thing she's done. You've got other books that you've written now too, haven't you, Ruthie?
Yes, the Untold Story series. I have the complete series out now.
Tell me about the last time you were here. I think you had only finished maybe the second one.
Right, exactly.
And you didn't even have the copy of it yet. I believe you just had the first one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to see that you finished them all. You self published these, huh?
Yes.
What are they about? We'll talk about that.
Okay.
We don't want to drive you into a nervous breakdown.
Self-publishing almost did. That's the end of that situation.
No more self-publishing.
Right.
Okay, tell me about what the Untold Story is about.
Okay. They pick up in the 60s after the Sheltons fled Illinois, as you know, in 1951.
Right.
Because they're set in the 60s, the 70s, and then recently, I went ahead and wrote it in a fiction category.
Okay.
Because a lot of these people are still alive.
I see.
And to write a true crime, you have to really...
You probably have to get releases and all kinds of things.
It's really difficult. You have to especially dot your I's and cross your T's and make sure your facts are straight and correct. And I didn't want to go through that again. I just wanted to let people know basically what went on in Florida and just enjoy the writing process. So I changed the name from Shelton to Callahan because that was where my dad lived, in Callahan, Florida, when he died.
Okay.
And it's based on him and Big Earl.
Oh,
my
really?
Dad and Big Earl and our family growing up, basically. But the first one, The Untold Story, Death, Deceit, and Discovery, picks up in the mid-60s when my dad got home, when he walked through that door after coming back to Fairfield and burying his mother, who had been murdered here in January 1967.
See, you just told me that story, and I did not know that story.
Yeah.
That is an amazing story. And at the time... Nobody realized, well, somebody clearly realized that she had been murdered, but I mean, the powers that be couldn't figure it out.
Every death certificate that I read, even if they were shot at my family, it would say by unknown assailant, or nothing was ever black and white on the death certificates.
Right.
And even though my grandmother, this was my dad's mom, Lily, was found with 9 ounces of methanol in her stomach. I got the coroner's report, as I told you, from Indianapolis.
Yeah.
It was still determined on the death certificate, unknown circumstances, unknown cause.
Somebody's wanting to call in. I guess if you want to put the headset back. I'm told that it's good, okay? All right, here we go. Good morning. You're on the radio with Ruthie Shelton.
Yeah. Hello, Ruthie. I'm Randy Henson. She knows me.
Oh, I know you, Randy. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple of things. My dad wrote and recorded the death of Carl Shelton.
Yes.
And I own the Charlie Burger Rope.
Yes.
And I just wanted to tell everyone that Ruthie's book is absolutely the best one out there. And I don't know why someone hadn't made a movie out of it.
Oh, you are too sweet, Randy. Thank you.
I got to tell you, Randy, you know, I wasn't taking calls, but I'm glad we took yours.
I just hope somebody finally does make one. But I just wanted to tell you that and say hi to Ruthie. So, thanks.
Thank you, Randy.
Thanks for calling in.
Could you, when you hang up or something, send me your phone number so I could talk to you? Because I don't have a way to contact you.
Okay, I'll have to call you back after your show's over, and because my cell phone's okay. About to go dead. I'm in a bad
Thanks.
Area.
Thanks, Randy. Good to hear from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Randy. How about that?
That's great.
That is nice, yeah. Huh? That is wonderful.
He brought the news to Hannah House Museum last year when we had the Wayne County tour.
Oh, that's right.
So that we could have it there at the same time that I was having the book signing during the tour, which I'll have again.
Yeah, we're talking about Saturday. The tour is this Saturday, right?
Correct.
The book signing is Friday in Mount Carmel.
Mount Carmel.
Why don't you go ahead with your schedule?
Okay. All right. Y'all have your pencils ready. Okay. May 10th, Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we will be at the Effingham Public Library. On May 11th, we will be in Peoria at the Peoria Riverfront Museum for Senior Morning. See, I get to do senior morning now. I'm old. Okay. Same day. I'm a grandmother.
Well, we'll see. That counts.
Same day, May 11th, Peoria at the Peoria Public Library North Branch at 6 p.m. And then that Saturday, Amy and I are hosting the one-time-only Prohibition Tour to Peoria. And
Tell me about the Prohibition Tour. You have one seat left,
One seat left. This is so exciting because the reason it's one-time-only is because we go to the Peoria Riverfront Museum Prohibition exhibit.
Yeah.
And that's leaving the end of May.
Oh, I see.
And so this is never going to happen again. We pick up all through Illinois. I can't even tell you where all we pick up. And so I'll be babbling most of the way up there and telling y'all the history and, you know, like we've been talking about this morning. And Bernie Drake is a step-on tour guide in Peoria. And so he's going to host us while we're in Peoria
going to
different Shelton sites. We're going to have lunch first thing when we get there at what used to be Bernie's Old Tavern. It's now Kenny's Westside Pub.
Oh, no kidding.
And so it's going to be fun, a lot of fun.
Folks, if you're interested in that, you can call tour director is Amy at 618-751-2924 and you can get online at treasuretourssi.com, TreasureTourssi.com. And RuthieShelton.com is another place that folks can find out. Your schedule is on RuthieShelton.com?
Yes, it is.
RuthieShelton.
Yes.
Shelton.com. I don't know where the time goes.
I know.
it's really been fun. I appreciate you coming on again. And
Thank you.
Next time you're around, just please, whenever you're coming up,
okay.
I would love to have you on the show again because it's just a terrifically fun time.
Thank you.
That's Ruthie Shelton, and that's it for the Bruce Dickey Show today. We'll talk to you all again real soon.